Hi, everybody. Welcome to BBS Radio, and you're listening to Growing Up Indigo with Adina Bannick. And today, we have a fantastic guest, and I'm so excited. And her name is Carolyn Gervais. Carolyn, I hope I'm pronouncing that last name correctly.
You are.
Oh, good, good. So, guys, I've been writing about this now for weeks, and she's here. And so let me just give you a quick introduction for Carolyn, because I don't want to waste a second. Carolyn is an author, and, well, she's many other things, but she is an author. She is, I believe, certified in spiritual psychology, clinical hypnotherapy. She has a master's degree in holistic nutrition. She's an author of several books, Life Before Life, How the Soul Agreements Direct Our Destiny, which is the book I just finished. She also wrote, I Dreamed I Was Human, Awakening from the Illusion. I'm getting that next. I also, as I was reading, Carolyn's also an esthetician, which I found interesting. She is also... Oh, she's a singer. But I don't think Carolyn's singing anymore. She stopped doing that, but we'll talk about that later. She is, her site is www.awakeningyou.com. She's also a very good dream interpreter. And there are many other things that I want to talk about with her. However, I am now going to introduce Carolyn. Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, I have to say something. I don't know how you fit all that stuff in. As I was reading the book, I'm like thinking of all the things that, you know, you're talking about and the years of study and all the things you were dealing with. And then I'm looking at what you accomplished during those times. And I was like, how did she do all this? She's raising a child. I mean, like, I'm thinking, what have I accomplished? And I came up with my measly things, and I'm like, boy, that woman took a lot of energy with her here to Earth this time. So you did a lot of things. So I'm so glad to have you. I really am. I thought your book was wonderful.
Thank you.
One of the things that I felt separated your book from other books of the genre is that you immediately start to tell us your story. And what I especially loved about that is that one of the main, actually the reason I decided to do this show was because I wanted to, like you, I read every biography I could as a child. And it was because I wanted to know, how do you get there? What qualities do you have that make you able to rise above where you come from? And like you, I had almost an identical childhood as yours with small differences. So I knew that I needed to help the world, but how? And how do you become that person? So when you were able to tell us and share with us what you went through and how you managed to, I want to say, grow, it makes all the difference in the world as we read what you have come up with. It's not a book where someone's just lecturing to us at all. So that's what made it so different for me. Would you mind sharing a little bit of your story?
Sure. It's a long story, but we will start.
I can kind of guide you.
Yeah,
I
go ahead and guide me.
I would love to. I've read it, so I know your story. And
okay.
Let's start with the fact, just the basic facts about, you know, your family unit and what the kind of, before we do that, can you talk about imprinting, how you came in? We're going to do it both at the same time. So you're going to tell us about your immediate family and what you came in imprinted with and what imprinting is.
Okay.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's good. Well, first of all, I came in as one of these kids, and I suspect that you probably did the same thing. It was like between age 2 and 4, somewhere in there, I swear I just blinked my eyes, and when I did, I realized I was in this body called Carolyn, and I did not know how I got here. And I mean, it was like, where am I? It was like I was all of a sudden here. And I had a memory of what it felt like before I got here. I was in a realm of love and peace and safety and understanding, and there was no chaos or anything. And I was looking around me, and I'm thinking, what is going on here? This is so chaotic in this place here. And noisy. I noticed that everything was noisy. That's one thing that really bothered me, the noise. And I said, okay. And I guess I was talking to my soul, or it was my soul I was in communication with, or the consciousness of God. I don't know. All I know is I was in touch with this all-knowing consciousness, and I knew it very well. And I said, I want to come back. I want to go back home. I don't want to stay here. And I said, so I want to go back home. And so I said, I asked, and I waited, thinking, oh, I'm going to go back home in a second. You know?
Right.
And nothing happened. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened. And so I'm asking and asking, so I'm thinking, why am I here? What am I supposed to do here? What am I supposed to do with all this? So I decided the only thing I could do is stay here as long as I have to stay here, as long as God or whatever wants me here, and try to figure out how to get back home with everything I'm experiencing. So that's how my life started out. And I have an identical twin sister, which I came in with, but she and I are like night and day. You know, we look alike, but we don't, we're not alike.
Well, that's because you were born 25 minutes apart.
I was born 20 minutes before her, yep.
Maybe that was what had happened. It was just too long a time from birth, that's it. I'm teasing. Of course not.
Yeah. So anyway, I wanted to understand how to get back home. And so when I was probably 6-7 years old, I was asking all the adults in my life, how did I get here? Why are we here? What's this all for? You know, and everybody looked at me like, what are you asking? You know, they didn't know the answers to those questions. And they said, nobody knows the answers to those questions. And when I found that out, I was floored. I just was so, I felt like a lot of my life force energy went out of me because it was such a shock. I assumed that all adults had the answers to everything because they were grown up, you know.
Right.
And so my imprinting was that I had a very strict, overly punishing father that used instruments to punish us with, and he was a very, very angry man. And that shocked me, and I was scared of him, and I could not figure out at first when I was really like a baby, I could not figure out what about him I was afraid of. And for a long time, I didn't even know who these people were. I only knew who my mother was and my twin sister, and I did not know what these people that were called my grandparents were. I did not know my father. I just knew he was there. And I didn't know my big sister either. So it took me time to figure out who they were and how they were related to me in my life. And my mother developed depression in her 30s. And so she became an alcoholic and very mentally disturbed, you know. She would do weird things. She would try to commit suicide by locking herself in the bathroom. so many times I remember in the, like, midnight on school nights, you know, we'd have to, my dad would get the bathroom door unlocked with a screwdriver or something, and then we'd have to drive to a hospital to get her stomach pumped, you know. And my sister and I would sit out in the parking lot by ourselves in the dark, my twin sister and I, my big sister stayed mm-hmm. home, and right. just for hours and hours in the dark, you know, wondering why we were in this family, you know. Right. And I decided I must be being punished for something. That's what I thought. I must have done something bad that God didn't like, and so that's why I'm in this family. And so the imprinting was my parents said that this world was hell and to get used to it. That's what they taught us as children.
Mm-hmm.
So that did not give me a very good outlook on life.
So now, can you just tell us what imprinting details, like what do you mean by imprinting, so we know?
Okay. When we, before we come to this earth, we're multidimensional, so we've been other people and other things, you know, since the beginning of time, since the beginning of mm-hmm. creation. So, therefore, we do have we have our own wiring, like how mm-hmm. our body
right.
is wired. But when we come in, we choose parents that are
right.
going to help bring up situations and things that we want to work on in this life, bring them to the surface or trigger them so we have to think about them and then hopefully master them in whatever way we can. And when we're in our mother's womb, we're being imprinted by our mother the whole time we're in there, and by our father and all the people around us, because we're actually, you know, we're guiding that body to be developed. And so we're very much a part of the earth's energy even before we're born, because we have these parents that we're getting to know on inner levels as,
mm-hmm.
as we're in the womb. And we pick up their energy and feelings and the way they are. And so that adds to our wiring. And then when we're born, we keep being imprinted by the people around us, especially our families.
Right.
And their habits, their bad habits, their good habits, their perceptions of life, their perceptions of themselves, and so on and so forth. And so depending on how our parents see life and see God and see themselves depends greatly on how we see ourselves.
So what you're saying is that it's basically, I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh,
it's basically karma, genetics, it's all of it is what you're saying. So you,
yeah, it's
that's
all
how,
of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And
but
I
karma
know.
Now.
Go ahead.
I was going to say karma is not necessarily bad. There's all kinds
no,
of
No, I know.
Karma.
I,
yeah.
Of course I wouldn't believe karma is bad. Karma is just all of the contracts that we've made with people. It doesn't mean it's bad. It's,
right.
It just, it is. Mm-hmm. It's just our ties to people. I know that you mentioned at one point you felt that rather than the importance nurture seems to play or suggests it plays, you felt that our imprinting plays a much bigger part.
I do, because nobody can see what goes on inside of a person. And, you know, I remember back to really as a baby, you know, a year old at the oldest, you know, at the youngest. And I remember watching adults and saw and felt what they were feeling when they were talking to me. And
mm-hmm.
I felt like they thought of me as more of a, just a imposition, you know, that stop asking all these questions. You don't need to know the answers to these questions. They wouldn't even answer my questions. I would stand next to them and ask them a question about life or the world or whatever, and I'd ask it 5 times, and they still just ignored me. And finally, I would yell it, and, you know, louder, you know, not scream it, but yell, talk louder. And then they'd punish me for doing that. And I said, well, why don't you answer my question? Because not all of your questions have to be answered. You're just a kid, you know. And so this is how that imprinted me to believe that I was just a kid, that, and I was taught by my parents to be seen but not heard in public. So whenever we went over anybody's house, my twin sister and I, my big sister got to do whatever, but she's 4.5 years older, so she was, you know, a little, she could do more than we could. But we'd have to sit in the chairs in the living room, in the people's living room, separate chairs, my twin sister and I, and we would have to sit there all night long while the adults talked and drank and had coffee. We could not go play anywhere or play with anything. We just have to sit in those chairs until we fell asleep. And then they'd put us in somebody's bed, you know. But that's how my life was. I grew up feeling like I didn't deserve to be loved. I didn't deserve to be noticed. I didn't deserve attention.
Wait, but isn't that a case for being non-nurtured? And had you been nurtured, you might have turned out differently?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's why I'm saying, because in the book you said that that our genetics, you know, and our I see. I get it. I think I get it.
Okay.
You're doing it all together. I got it.
Yeah. It's all imprinting.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. I see how you do that. It's kind of like you, it's all under one banner.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like we're in this movie watching it and trying to understand it. And so we're absorbing what we feel from others and what we're picking up from watching others.
Right. And I guess in our alternative lives, our parallel lives, we are living out the different paths and lives we could have had.
Right.
Which is what I personally believe.
Yes,
so, okay. I understand very well what you're saying now. So, okay. Now, so you're in this childhood, and I know that you spent a great deal of time really pondering and thinking and really searching.
Yeah.
And I know that you formed, because of your father and you, a great love of music and singing, and I know your sisters, the three of you, sang, and that was your reason for living. Can we start from there? And okay.
Well, I started singing, practicing singing with my twin sister when we were 4 years old. We decided we were going to be singers when we grew up. And so we would sing all the time, you know, just whatever. We'd have, we'd listen to a song over and over again until we learned it, and then we'd just sing it to all the adults, which they enjoyed, believe it or not, our grandparents and my parents, we'd sing. And that became something for me to live for. Other than that, I don't think I could have stayed here. Because singing gave me a purpose. It gave me something that I could have passion about and love. And so by the time I was like 11, my big sister was 14, something like that, a talent scout, or just, I know it sounds, that's so old-fashioned, but that's what they called it back then, found us, and he took us to the different nightclubs just to get us up there to sing with the band in the nightclub, that he would have an arrangement with the nightclub to let us get up there and sing, my two sisters and I. And that got us started, and it went from there. My sister, my big sister, left home at 17. She got married, and then it just left my twin sister and I. And when we got in high school, we found a girl in chorus that wanted to form a trio that sang good. And she wanted to get in a trio with us, and I said, sure. So we did that, and we sang all through high school.
And what was her name?
Her name was Jean.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, sorry, but like I'm already ahead of it here, and I'm thinking about what happens later.
Oh, okay. And then you mean like when I was grown up?
Yes.
Was growing up?
Yes. Yeah.
You want the part where I was
not yet. Not yet.
70?
Not yet.
Okay.
Because it's horrible.
Okay.
It's just like so bad. I mean, it's not her fault. I'm just saying it's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what you want me to talk about at this point.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just, you know, just
you
keep talking
about
that. Yes.
Singing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, after high school, I mean, what happened next was that I sang a little bit in other bands in town. But then I was married because I got pregnant at 17, and I married the father and of my baby, and he told me I couldn't sing anymore, or he'd take my son away from me, my child away from me. And so I stopped, you know, and besides that, I mean, because my child became the most important thing to me at that point. I mean, I wanted to sing, and I had plans to do that as my son got older, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it as long as I was married to my son's father. And so when my son was 7, I left my first husband, and I started looking for bands to sing with. And that was really, I had never worked in my life. I went to business college. I did go to business college, but secretarial work was not my forte. So I didn't stay in that for very long. But when I divorced my husband, what I wanted to do more than anything in life was to sing. So I found bands on my own. I'd go and audition with bands, and I found bands to sing with, and I was making money that way. And well, where do you want me to go from here?
Well, I just wanted to let you and the, you know, our listeners know that the reason I had you do this was certainly not to make you uncomfortable. It mm-hmm. was so everyone would know that so often when we're going through a life that seems difficult, we feel that sure, you could do it, or you could do it because you probably had an easier life. And I just wanted them to know that your life was far from easy. It was quite difficult. So it wasn't that I wanted you to tell us every detail. It was just that I wanted them to know that you can relate to everyone and they can relate to you. So at this point, I just really want to start talking about how this all developed for you, and how you got serious about going into metaphysics. And I want to talk a lot about your soul path purpose and how you do that, because I found it fascinating.
Okay. Well, number one, I was so depressed being married to my first husband, because he restricted me. He had to know every move I made. And we got in a lot of arguments because he would not let me sing at least twice a week or something, you know, on the weekends, because he would be home with our son. But no, that wasn't good enough, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was very verbally and mentally and emotionally abusive, and sometimes physically. And I just came to the, after being married to him for 8 years and putting up with all the restrictions, because I went through all the punishment with my father and the pain of being punished all the time and hit all the time with my father. And then I go into this marriage, and he's just like my father, and he's telling me, I can't do this, I can't do that. And I was depressed, so depressed. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was going to have a baby, so I had to be here to have that baby. But if I hadn't been pregnant, I don't know what I would have done. I probably would not have stayed here. But I decided, I got really mad at God, and I said, God, I have prayed to you my whole life, and you have never given me what I've asked you. I asked him to heal my mother, to make my father not so mean, and to, you know, find a way for me to sing and have a happy life. And he's not, and this is where I end up, you know, with an abusing husband and a baby, which I loved with all my heart and soul, but at 17 I wasn't, I really didn't plan on being a mother at 17. So I said, so I don't know what to do, God. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Why am I here? Why have you left me here? Why have you put me here? I don't understand. Am I being punished? Do you exist? Are you real or what? And I said, I don't believe in you anymore. And I said, and until you prove to me you exist, I won't believe in you. Mm-hmm. And things started happening. Little things started happening. Little miracle things, you know. And I was, I all of a sudden, I was so intrigued in reading metaphysical, anything metaphysical and spiritual that was in the metaphysical field from at age 17. That's when I started, because I was starving for the for reason of why I was here and why I had to stay here. And I could not stop reading. And I did, I mean, I never stopped reading until I started writing, and I still read once in a while, but there's a lot of things that you read that you've read before, you know. They're too much like everything else, you know. So you get to a point where, you know, you've got so much information that you start realizing how things fit together, you know. And so I kept studying and studying, and I divorced my husband. And it was hard because I had never worked a job in my life. Well, yeah, I did. I had a couple secretarial jobs that lasted maybe 2 weeks, but that was it. And so I had to be out in the world for the first time by myself with nobody to help me. And I was scared to death. But I knew my option was to do that and have God help me figure it out, or stay in a miserable marriage and die like my mother did. My mother gave up on her life, and she gave up. My mother was a singer, too. Alcohol and the cigarettes put a damper on that. And so she gave up, and I was bound and determined I was not going to end up like my mother and give up. So I took my 7-year-old son and moved in with some people, and that were metaphysical, and I had known the lady for a long time, and they started preaching to me, and knowing that I'd been in metaphysics and spirituality for probably 10 years, and I read everything I could get my hands on, books about ghosts, books about extrasensory perception, books about good witch, white witchcraft, books about Edgar Cayce, you know, Ruth Montgomery, all these people, you know, that used to be famous way back when.
And you read Seth books. I saw that, and I was in heaven.
I read all the Seth books, yes.
And Michael. I forgot about the Michael book. I read that 30 years ago, and I never read it again. Is it still in print? I would love to read that again.
And I've read all Edgar Cayce's books. You know, name it. I've read them. You know, and I freaked my first husband out because I didn't know I had some of these abilities that I had until I started meditating, because I was studying Eastern philosophy, too. That was real big because it gave me a lot of the answers I was looking for. And I would have dreams that my husband was cheating on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would wake up with my fingers in his eyes, like I would when I was like fighting with the woman that he was having an affair with in my dream. And I wake up mm-hmm. with two fingers were in his eyes.
I know. I thought that was, oh my God, how did you like do that? You were sleeping.
I don't know. That just shows you maybe his soul wanted that or something, you know. And then another time I was dreamed again about a woman he was having an affair with because he'd go on business trips. And I woke up with I had taken my teeth and chomped on his back as hard as I could.
I know. I know. Funny.
He said, "Why did you do that?" And I told him the dreams. And he denied them. But I knew he was lying to me.
Somewhere, and I believe that actually happened. I do believe that happened. It did.
Yeah.
You definitely did confront them somewhere on another plane.
I did. Yeah. Absolutely. I know I did, too. And then later on, he admitted he was seeing this girl. But anyway, so I decided, well, I'm going to have to leave this marriage because I cannot be in love with anybody that I can't trust. Or I can't stay with anybody that I can't trust.
Right. So, yeah, you were with the couple that were very, you know, church-going people, and they wanted you to only sing at church.
Too.
Right.
Yeah, they wanted me to sing in churches and retirement mm-hmm. homes and things like that instead of nightclubs, because they told me that the nightclubs are where evil spirits are and dark entities, and that they are attaching to me and mm-hmm. that I'm them home to their house,
right?
And that they would tell me that my spirit, that my the guy of the friend that my friend was married to, his name was Paul in the book. He was a psychic, he claimed, and I wanted to believe he was a psychic.
It was Kevin. It was Kevin. I just have to say that.
Oh, was it they Kevin? Oh, see, I don't
Nancy
remember.
Nancy and Kevin, yeah.
Nancy
I don't know
Kevin.
Why I had to do that, but yeah.
Oh, that's right, Kevin. And he went into trances, and he would tell me what my guides wanted him to tell me, and that was that I was going against God's will, that God did not want me singing in nightclubs, and because I was being, there were entities, bad entities attaching to me and taking over my brain.
Oh,
and
God.
So they couldn't believe anything that came out of my mouth. And I was so depressed at that time that I became, and my husband was trying to take my son away from me, and we were still going through the divorce. It took 9 months. It was hell, literally hell.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And I was so depressed, and then them on my backs, Kevin and Nancy, and that, you know, I just did not know what to do, and finally I just said, I can't do this anymore. They believe that to this day, they still believe that my brain is other entities working my brain, not me.
You keep in touch with them?
No, not for 3 years now. I have not been around them.
Okay.
Up until years ago, that's just
one of the things that I just have to say this, because there's something uh-huh. that recently happened. If anybody ever runs into someone who calls themselves a spiritual teacher or anything like that, if you run into someone who says that their word is the last word mm-hmm. and that they know what's best for you, run. That's all I'm going to say.
Away. Run the other way.
Just run. So yes. That's it. But can
but
we?
I was young, you know.
Right.
And I needed their help. I needed their help. And
right. I know.
And so,
and they did help. They did help for a while.
They did help, but they told me my spirit had turned its back on me, and that now I'm going to suffer terribly. And that's when I moved out.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved in
Thank
with
God.
My dad. Yeah. And I moved in with my dad, which was another horror story.
Right.
And because my dad kicked me out of the house when he found out I was pregnant. He said I was no longer his daughter. And he just deserted me.
But can we just stop here for just a second?
Yeah.
Only because it's 22 and we
okay.
only have about 20 minutes and
okay.
there's so much of your work too that I want to do. So can we just, I want to ask a couple of things. So I don't want to, I hate stopping you too though.
No, go ahead, sweetie.
Okay. All right. Now, I want to just move a little bit forward and ask you to tell us about our soul path purpose, our secondary purpose, our primary purpose. Could you explain that a little bit?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When, like I said before, when we come into this, before we come into this world, we choose certain souls that we are going to meet at a certain point in our life when it's time for us to wake up to something that we have been running away from.
Right.
And they trigger that in us. And people should never assume that all soul agreements are happy and joyful. I mean, they're
mm-hmm.
a mixture. They're all different. Some
right.
are very, very... The hardest... lessons we learn are soul agreements from probably siblings or families or friends, somebody that we've been around a long time. Those long-term agreements are soul agreements. But not all soul agreements are long-term either. It just depends,
right.
you know.
And
mm-hmm. so we choose the souls that are going to trigger things in us that we don't want to face, and we're going to do the same for them.
Right.
And we don't know we're doing this. It just happens. So, no, what was the other part of that?
The other part is I know there are some people who are warriors, some people who are
mm-hmm.
here to learn discernment, and
mm-hmm.
you have them as their primary purpose or a secondary purpose. Could
mm-hmm.
you explain that? And how do you know? How do you know when somebody's purpose is a warrior?
Is a warrior?
Warrior.
W-A-R-R. Warrior. Oh, okay.
Warrior. It's
well,
my accent.
I learned this technique through a mentor years ago, and it shows you, it tells you, and I do this intuitively,
mm-hmm.
And I figure out there's a list of things. Our attitude, we come in with a certain attitude towards life, towards ourselves. We come in with a certain fear that's deeper than any other fear. We come in with a goal that we want to make sure we accomplish in this life, the most important goal we want to accomplish in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And we come in with a certain personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that develops as we're children. That's developing the whole time we're children. But we come in with some of a personality normally because we have been other things many times. So we carry that over, and that all mixes together to form us. All those different energies mix together to form us. So we all have different things that we have to work on. So I intuitively get in touch with a person's energy. I ask them certain questions, and once they call me and I talk to them and I hear their voice, then I start picking up things about them,
mm-hmm.
and I ask them a couple questions, and it's different for different people. It's whatever I feel is necessary to ask them, like what what are you looking for? Do you have a passion and all this stuff? And by finding out these different things about them, their attitude, their chief feature, their goal, the role they're playing, because there's different roles that we come in to play mainly,
mm-hmm.
and they play through our personality. And I tune into them, and I find out there's seven different roles, seven different attitudes, seven different fears,
mm-hmm.
features. There's seven aspects to each one of those. And so I'm tuning in to which aspect is them. And I do use a pendulum with this,
because
then I dangle it over it, you know, the word.
Yes.
And I figure it out that way. And I know, and I've done so many of these soul charts, I know when I find their energy in the, I don't know where I'm finding it. All I know is I think about them, and I can find their energy out there in the universe somewhere, and tune into it. And then I start picking up a lot more about them than just their role and attitude and all that. And then I figure out how these are all working together for them in this life, according to what they need to work on or want to know, want to experience, want to understand, like a relationship or something that they have. They want to understand why this relationship is the way it is. So it's just all intuitive stuff, and I have guidelines as far as what aspects they are part of, like what chief feature they have, what is their greatest fear. What role are they playing? There's warrior, there's scholars, there's kings, there's, I can't remember them right off the top of my head, but there's seven.
Could you do us a favor? Could you just take anybody that you've known or anything and just give us like what they would be, what their personality would be, what their goal would be, just, and you know, you could even make it up. I just want us to hear like one person.
Okay, just a second, because I have somebody like that in my book.
I know, just, but
because I have to have a person that I know before I can just.
Okay, I do. But, do you want me to turn to somebody?
And, I'm just trying to find, let's see, where is that?
I just want everybody to know, because this is, I get questions like this all the time. What's my purpose? And although I would answer it completely differently, this is, boy, you can't get any more detailed than this.
Yeah.
This is detailed. And I want them to hear this.
Okay. Okay. Let me find this situation, this one in my book, because then I won't be stammering and stuttering here.
I'll get it. Wait. I should have it right here because, okay, hold on a minute. I can find it.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, it's another book you said?
No. Yeah, he's looking in the books because there's this one sample that I give.
I have it too, but I don't know where it is.
Here, Doug, try 51. Try 51. I have two things in there. One is a soul path plan for the world right now.
Okay.
And one for some clients I've worked with.
I know. I read the clients and I read the, here we go. I have it. Do you want me, do you want to know what page it's at? Okay.
Clients, is that the one you're on?
I'm on client story 52.
Yeah, I got it.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Let's see. Where's that page? This isn't the one, Doug.
If I just started it, would you be able to
No, because I didn't write down what her overleaves, that's what they're called. I didn't write down what her overleaves were in this.
I can. Hold on a minute. Oh,
okay.
You didn't. It's not in the book, you mean?
It's in the book. There's this another one in the book that's about two people that work together. In
oh, no, wait just a minute. Oh, I know that one, too. I know that one, too. He worked for her. And yes, hold on. That's later on. That's later on. Okay. Let me see.
Okay.
Okay, I don't remember that page, but I'll get it. But actually, this one does, the one on 52 does have it, because you have right here that you do. Hold on. Gosh, we're like sitting here. her soul plan is, well, I don't know, maybe not. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. This is not good. Okay, could you just... Okay, here we go.
Well, let's say...
I got it.
Say,
I have another one. The other one was Daniel and Lisa.
Yes.
So it's a soul path plan. It's on page 68. And Daniel, in this incarnation, he is an artisan.
Right.
Okay. So his... And Lisa, go ahead. You can take it from here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Okay.
Daniel, I figured out Daniel was an artisan. And artisans are creators. They create things that other people may not have created yet. And they are very emotional people. They very moody. And they can be insecure. So Daniel, do you want me to just tell you what happened because of that, or just tell you the...
Does he have any... So his role is that of an artisan. Does he have any secondary...
Yes.
Okay.
His goal in life is acceptance.
Okay.
And that would be perfect for the role of an artisan, because they are insecure. So his goal in life is to feel like he is accepted. And people with this goal of acceptance can have lifelong issues with feeling accepted and accepting their own life and those in it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are only two overlays. I work with five of them in a regular soul chart. And Lisa's role, his boss, has a warrior mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Means that she's strong-willed, focused, and she dislikes problems and chaos. So Daniel got mad at her because he had written a promotional piece on her at her request, and she wanted to change a lot of it, and it really upset him. And because he felt like she was putting down his work, and here he had been a promo writer for 20 years before she ever came into his life, and so he felt like she was putting him down.
Mm-hmm.
So her warrior mentality wanted to change it. And so he got upset at her and told her that your way isn't any better, it's just different than mine, you know. And so... they got in a little disagreement there. So what had to happen was both of them, you know, went back to their offices. He was going to do what she said, but reluctantly. But she had time to think about what he said, and he had time to think about what he said to her, too. And they both felt bad about what they said. Now, her goal in life, her role is warrior, but her goal is discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And people in discrimination use their critical faculties to express opinions in matters of judgment. So you see how those two go together, warrior and discrimination. And she can feel quite justified in upholding her opinions and expressing them when she feels the need to. So these two people are going to clash. Now, he wanted to know why he clashed with this woman and how to get along with her or somebody, because unless they resolved it, you know, it would come up again, or one of them would be fired, probably him, and he'd have to start all over again and hadn't accomplished anything. So through this understanding, he saw why he was attacking her, why he felt a need to attack her opinion, and she understood why he felt the way he did by what she said to him.
That was a good outcome. Do people ever have two goals, two purposes, or is it just, would that be the other five aspects you work with?
No, they can move to, there's a, each one of these is dual, okay? So they can move to the opposite one sometimes, but this is the one they came in with, but they can slide to the opposite one sometimes for balance.
Okay, so that's like the Enneagram thing. It sounds similar to that, but I think it's different.
Oh,
yes,
yeah, it's very different.
I understand. Okay, yeah. So, and you do this. So you have a practice and you do this, and they can go to your website, which, again, I would like to tell everyone is www.awakeningyou.com. So I'm going there too. I've been there, but I'm going to go back. And I wanted to talk just a little bit for a minute about some of the Kundalini experiences you've had, because they were like, wow. I mean, I just wanted you to talk about it for a minute.
Well, they started in my 20s. This kind of Kundalini. There's many kinds of Kundalini experiences, hundreds, thousands probably. It depends on the person and the soul. And I happened to experience it with fire coming up from my root chakra, a fire so intense it felt like I was being burned up inside. And this happened to me probably about 10 times over a 20-year period. And they would last, what would happen is I'd wake up in the middle of the night feeling like this animal was crawling in my stomach. And it was making me feel nauseated. So I would go into the bathroom and sit on the bathroom floor with my arm on the commode, you know, waiting to see what would happen, and this fire would start to come up so fast and so fierce. I was literally felt like I had been put on, like somebody lit me up with a flame, and my body was burning inside so bad. It was like torture, sheer horrible torture, and I thought I was going to die. Just a second. Each time this happened to me, I wondered if this was the time I was going to die, because I could not understand how anybody could take this pain and live. And it would go on, I don't know how long, and I would just keep praying to God, God, why is this happening? Why is this happening? If this is the time I'm going to die, please just let it be over, because I can't take this. I can't. It's too painful. And that's when the energy would come up and push me out the top of my head, and I'd pass out. And my husband was calling me, trying to get me to open the door and all this, and I couldn't even mouth any words as I started to be pushed out of the top of my head. I couldn't move my mouth. I couldn't make words. And so I would be out for I don't know how long, and then I'd wake up, and was sick to my stomach, and then I'd take care of that, and then I would be laying in a puddle of sweat. My shirt, my clothes were just soaked, and you could have wrung out my t-shirt. It was so wet, and I was laying in a puddle of sweat, and I was so weak that I barely could get back in bed. And it would take me a couple of days to get my energy back to where I could, you know, get out of bed and walk around. But I always knew it was a gift. You see, some of the most painful things can happen to us, and this is what I want people to know more than anything. Pain is in our mind. Pain is a belief. Pain is not really happening except in our mind and in our belief. that doesn't mean that we don't have to experience pain, because we experience pain in order to realize that we are not looking at something we need to look at. We are not moving the way our soul wants us to move. And so what our soul does is it takes our choice. Like, we have two choices with everything that happens in our life, to choose the best choice or a choice that isn't the best choice. And there's many bad choices. So whatever choice we choose, regardless whether it's a good choice or a choice that our soul would want us to choose or a choice our ego wants us to choose, we have free will. God will not go against our free will. That was the agreement. That's our soul agreement with God. God will not go against our will. But what God does instead is he takes our choice and turns it into a learning experience so that we are able to see why that was a bad choice and what would have been a better choice. And this is why we experience pain on this earth, because we make our choices too much through the ego and not enough through spirit or through our soul. And that means we have to get in touch with our soul and look deep inside ourselves. My Kundalini experiences were me. I had no confidence in myself. It was when I was going through the divorce. My father treated me like, you know, awful. And so I was just totally depressed all the time. And I was told that these experiences were to lift me above that, to get me out of that frequency level, and also to save my life, because I was killing myself with self-torture, with mental torture.
And afterward, they made you feel completely renewed and wonderful.
My body had been turned inside out.
Exactly. And so it was renewed. Beautiful. I can't believe we have to stop here, but we do. I didn't even get through half of what I wanted to talk about. Promise you'll come back.
Oh, yes, I promise.
Okay. Guys, I don't want to get off, but we have to. I want to thank you, Carolyn, for coming on. Please, guys, get her book. Again, it's called Life Before Life, How Soul Agreements Direct Our Destiny. Please go to her site and just look around. It's awakeningyou.com. Thank you again, everyone. Thank you again, Carolyn. I will see you next week. We will have Roberta Grimes on. And I love you guys. Have a great week. Bye, everyone.